are listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce, I can't say the guys, because it's not all guys this time. Over here on my right, we've got Martin Page.
How you doing, Mike?
Good. Welcome back, Pagey boy.
It's nice to be back. Thank you.
Next to him, we have Scott Gershon.
Hello, Mike. Oh, sorry. I was doing Bobby. Sorry. Hi, Mike.
And next to him, we have Hezekiah McMurray.
Hello.
Welcome back, Hez.
Thanks, man.
And next to him, we've got one of our guests today, Gloria Soto.
Hello, Mike.
And next to Glory, we've got Bill Burgess.
What up, G?
And next to Bill, we've got Wendy Simon.
Hello, Mike. Thank you.
And next to Wendy, we've got Rob Arbiter.
What is up, dog?
And joining us all the way from Germany, Skyping in, we've got Thomas Wendt. Thomas.
Good evening, everybody.
That is the voice of God.
The voice of God.
Wow. God religion.
Well, hey, we've got a big crowd here because today, ladies and gentlemen, we are celebrating our 70th podcast. The big 7-0. And once again, we got to congratulate our friend Rob Arbiter for being at all 70 shows.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The Iron Man of the Audio Nowcast. I got to get a hobby.
So I want to thank everybody for being here today. And we've got a lot of friends and family, and it's great. So we're just going to have a good time, and hopefully we don't go too long. And if we do, it's a two-parter.
It's a two-parter.
I want to start off with there's a bunch of things that happened, but basically I wanted Thomas to join us for two reasons. And the very first thing that we got to start out with before we get talking a little bit about other tech stuff is, recently Michael Jackson passed away. And I know, there's been tons of hype about Michael Jackson. And, you've seen all those e-news shows and all the A&E biographies and everything like that. But I wanted to talk a little bit about Michael Jackson because I know a lot of people on the podcast have either done work with him or for him or some way have met the man. And also, for me, Michael Jackson, he really did influence a lot of the technologies that I was really interested in. And I would always buy his albums because him and Bruce, that was just such a powerful production team.
Bruce Wedeen, right?
Yeah, Bruce Wedeen. And when you bought one of his, when you buy Bad and you listen to it or Dangerous, you can learn. And it's one of the few, one of the few teams that you really, that they're pushing the state of the art when you listen to what they're doing. So I just wanted to say a few, talk about a few stories, but mainly, for instance, I know Rob, you worked with Michael mm-hmm. a couple times, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. A couple times over a wide period of time. I actually met him fairly early on when I started with Stevie, sometime in the mid to late 80s. Because he and Stevie actually worked on a duet together that I did the programming for. And then years later for the History album, I worked with him just directly. It didn't have anything to do with Stevie, but wrote with him and did arranging and played keyboards on that album. And he would come to my studio to write. And I always had a really hard time reconciling his public persona with the actual guy I was working with because the two were very, very different. And, I always found him to be really professional and easy to work with and extremely organized. And
right.
It was always when I'd see the crazy stories going on, what would happen when he'd walk out of the studio was a whole different person to me than
right.
the studio guy.
How talented was he? You just cannot
No, he was incredibly talented. And not just the talents that people know about, but, he was also sort of a master organizer and he was great at figuring out how to do a project. He was, he just knew a lot more about the business than people gave him credit for. And, later there's all these stories about how other people were controlling him and how crazy things were. And maybe in his public life, that's true. But in the studio, it was a whole different thing. He was way more organized and professional and smart than a lot of people I've worked with.
When I was doing touring and when I was doing backline, It was like Michael Jackson tour. That was like the pinnacle of tours to get on. If you got on a Michael Jackson tour, you were, you know, you were at the...
Paid well.
And you're the top of the heap because he only took the best out, you know. And I was working with Teddy Riley actually during the Dangerous album, and I remember getting a call from Teddy saying that he was going to be the music director for the tour, and I was like, yes, because I was Teddy's keyboard tech, and I went out to Goodman's Music, and they treated me like royalty because he wanted me to order a whole new rig and just, mm-hmm. you know, just like going to a music store and having a blank check, mm-hmm. just buy anything you need or you think you may need while you're on the road. And mm-hmm. so I put together this big rig, and it was like I was just really excited, and boy, the disappointment I felt 3 days later when his engineer called me up and said Teddy decided not to be the music director. It was like, oh, it was so disappointing, you know?
One of the coolest stories we had with Michael actually wasn't for an album. He did the Super Bowl halftime show one year, and I don't remember what year it was, but he did some kind of huge entrance where there were helicopters flying around, and he appeared on these giant screens, and I don't remember all the logistics, but I did the sound design for a lot of that show, and we wanted to mix it, and we had to kind of mix it. I was renting a little house with a studio in the living room, basically, and we had to mix it at kind of stadium levels to see how it was going to play, because it wasn't just for TV. It was also going to be heard in the arena.
Right.
And so I needed to get some gigantic speakers, and I actually went to Scott, because I had remembered in Scott's studio for doing film sound, he had these giant speakers that were incredibly loud and just hugely present, and they were giant KRKs before anybody knew about KRKs. And so I actually bought a pair of these 13-inch woofer KRKs just for the Michael Jackson halftime show. And I remember I was working in this little house in Hollywood, and it was so loud when we were mixing this thing that I actually went outside to monitor the levels, and it sounded like a helicopter was taking off inside the house. And our neighbors, they were used to weird stuff coming out of the house, but they were looking out the windows like, is there a helicopter? But we mixed it. Yeah, my company's called Noisy Neighbors for a reason. Actually, it's because of that. But it was just such a cool project. The assignment is do a stadium show. We don't mind if you mix it at home. You just have to make sure we can hear it at stadium level and that it's going to play right. And it played fine.
It was the peak of talent for pop music. I mean, he was the top. And
well, there was also no such thing as impossible.
Yeah.
You know, production-wise, if you couldn't figure out how to do something, it just meant you had to work on it some more. And he would – I do remember him calling me in the middle of the night to tell me, you know, I want to try this one sound. I remember there was one song on History, and I don't remember the name of the song, but he wanted a string sound on it, but not exactly like strings. And he was trying to describe it, and he would sing me a line. He'd sing it to me, and then I'd play it on the keyboard back to him because he wanted to make sure I had it. And then he would describe how it's a string, but you know, maybe it has a breath to it.
Right.
And this is in the mid-90s. It's a lot easier to get some of those kinds of hybrid sounds now, but back then it wasn't so easy. And sometimes you'd have to throw synclaviers and, you know, $1 million worth of equipment at a problem like that. And it didn't matter. You just had to figure out how to do it.
Well, you always heard the money in the production. You know, you pick up Dangerous, pick up Bad. You know, you hear sounds at that time that were just state-of-the-art. And as a matter of fact, there was literally like an edict to some of the sound designers that they had to create new sounds.
Absolutely.
That
hadn't
been
heard
before.
Factory sounds whatsoever.
No presets.
We did all the videos for them.
Yeah.
And we did History video, and then we did Black and White, and we did one where, I'm not sure if it's Black and White or which one, where he basically destroys everything. But he turns from the Cougar, gets in the car, crashes everything. So he comes in, and we wanted to get some footsteps, so we went to a Foley stage, and he came down because he wanted to see what a Foley stage was.
Right.
And he ended up saying, do you mind if I try that? And he actually danced everything on the Foley stage with the mics in sync.
Wow.
And we were like, this is kind of cool. And you know, it's like, it was like, with a camera? You know,
You did, you'd been shot.
But it was cool. You know, he just sat there and he goes, well, where do I stand? Okay, stand here. And we put the mics out. There's the screen. You can hear it in your headphones. And just do it. So he actually found the surfaces he liked, matched it, and just started doing his own Foley sessions.
Right.
Kind of fun to watch.
You know, I guess all these stories are, I just wanted to just show people that, you know, when people say that he really was a big influence in music, there was a reason why, because he really was. There was, you know, there was a, I know, definitely a big loss in the pop world. And I know his whole personal life was odd, but if you separate that from his music, it was, the music was fantastic. Thomas, how was the news taken out in Germany?
Well, this was a big thing. We heard it in, we heard it on the radio, on that, Friday morning. It was, at ours. And, the continent went bananas. They changed TV programs. Music channels were running only Michael Jackson videos. They showed, I think this was the huge concert, at Bucharest from 92, I think. And then a lot of memorial things happened, that bars and clubs made Michael Jackson memorial nights. And I think the entire nation here in Germany was watching the memorial from the Staples Center as well. And the record sales went through the roof, and online, and CDs, and all these things.
You know what? That day, that Thursday that it happened, that night, I had finally had enough of the TV coverage, because at this point there was nothing else to say. There was truly no news. Everybody knew what had happened, and the news networks had been re-saying the same thing over and over and over for hours. So that night I decided to just get out of the house and go for a walk. And I went for a walk in a very quiet neighborhood, and every car that passed by had Michael Jackson blaring out of the window. And that was actually kind of a cool tribute, because that wasn't a big media thing. That was just all these people who felt the need to pop in the CD. And that was pretty cool. So I'm walking down this quiet, dark street, and I'm just hearing these songs coming and going past in every single car.
Yeah.
It was playing. It was pretty cool.
How many phone calls did you get? I bet you got a ton.
You know what? Yeah, it was ridiculous. And it got to the point where at first, you know, it was shocking. And then after a while, I was actually in meetings with attorneys and some other people, some of whom had worked with Michael, which was just a weird coincidence.
Right.
But I was in a meeting when all this happened. And, of course, the meeting got totally sidetracked. And everybody's cell phones started ringing and my phone started ringing. And in the beginning, I tried to be, you know, get involved emotionally on the phone. And, oh, it's so horrible and everything else. And by the end of the day, I felt bad. But it was, hello? Yeah, I know. It's absolutely horrible. Yeah, I'm totally broken up, but I got to go. I'll talk to you later. Okay, goodbye.
Yeah.
Because how many of those phone calls can you have? I must have gotten 30. Calls just that afternoon.
And I must have been number 29.
You were in there someplace. You were in there someplace.
Because I got that Rob.
Yeah. That Rob surfaced at about call number 10.
Anyhow, that was, I just wanted to say a few things. And if you really want to learn, you know, you just buy a Michael Jackson album. You can learn a lot. You can learn a lot about arrangements and about rhythm, and you can just about mixing. It's just, you know, it's the top.
And next time Andrew is here, we should revisit this topic a bit, because he did work on the tours and worked in the studio with him quite a bit. A lot more than I did.
Did you ever work with him, Pagey?
No, I didn't. Actually, I worked with Bill Bottrell, who was an engineer. Right. Did quite a bit of work with him later on. And but I was very, you know, as we all were as writers, tremendously influenced by his sounds and the songs. And when you stop and you look back at what you wrote earlier during that era, when myself and my partner first came to America, we was very influenced by, you know, the early Off the Wall and Thriller records, because it was just incredible dance music.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it was interesting because I remember coming from England that Heatwave were a very big band at that time, and they had a great writer called Rod Temperton. And
they were great.
And Quincy pulled Rod Temperton over to write for, you know, Michael and Brothers Johnson. And if you listen to some of the Patty Austin records and around that time, you can really hear the production of Quincy Temperton and Bruce Sweden, how their sound appeared as well. And I think the ingredients of that with Michael was pretty phenomenal. But Temperton wrote some fantastic songs as well at that period.
That's great. I'm going to have to check out some of those, because that was a golden moment.
Yeah. He was all over Thriller, right?
Over Thriller. All over really what Quincy was doing at that time. You know, the Brothers Johnson's Patty Austin and James Ingram. Mm-hmm. Temperton was really brought in for that. And if you listen to Thriller, you can really hear Temperton's kind of writing, you know, from that period on, because, you know, the early Heatwave hits, Groove Tonight.
That stuff is great.
Boogie Nights. And if you just, you know, close your eyes, you can hear the next advancement of that with great production from Quincy. Yeah.
And we shouldn't forget also Steve Porcaro, who we had on the podcast here. He wrote Human Nature.
Right. Mm-hmm. He wrote Human Nature?
Yeah, he did.
didn't know he wrote that. That's a brilliant keyboard part.
It is. Yeah. Nice
what I think we're saying here is that around that time, it was a great, great team
right.
that got around, which, again, probably, you know, Michael and Quincy really had the vision for changing everything at that time.
No question. And Michael without Quincy was never quite the same.
No,
I mean, that was,
it wasn't.
It was still great, but there was something unbelievable.
Yeah. No, you're definitely
good ingredients,
right.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thanks for bringing us down,
I
Mike.
Know. Wow, how do we segue from that one? We're just going to do it. Anyhow, Thomas is with us because we want to talk about a great new, speaking of recording. There
all
we
right.
go. There's a
segue. That's a segue.
Nice. Thomas is with, Thomas, what is the name of your company is,
the name of my company is Integrative Concepts. I do communications for some, companies from the audio arena, like Salomon Software, Propellite Software, and some others. And so I think you want to get to Propellerhead Software.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. We want to talk about Propellerhead and the release of Record, which I think is just going to change the game in a very big way. But Thomas, why don't you tell us a little bit about Record and just give us a little bit of background about the product.
Well, Record is a program to record music, and Propellerhead Software have been getting back and forth for quite some time because everybody's familiar with Reason, I guess. Mm-hmm. And pretty early, the request from the users came that it might be great if Reason could record audio because via Rewire it was able to connect it to other digital audio workstation programs. But not everybody really got the concept, and so the demand got bigger and bigger. But the Propellerheads have been thinking, how could they do it to make it their way? Because they wanted to do it in a different way and not copy a lot of stuff from the other programs. Because they thought that for just recording music to support the creative flow of a musician putting a song together, there are a lot of technical things in the way working with some programs because they are focused so much on the engineering part of things and nitty-gritty editing and stuff like that. So they came up with Record, finding out that unbelievably this name was available for software.
That is incredible.
Yeah, so they just took it, and this became the theme, Record, and that's what they focused to make it easy to get songs recorded, build up, and add this, what they call the $1 million studio feel to it by having something like this SSL type of mixing, this virtual mixer in there, which is very, very amazing. I've been playing with the program for the last couple of weeks, and I really found that it's really totally different, and it's so musical and it sounds so good. And I heard, Mike, you had some experiences with it as well. So
I mean, I got on the open beta that they had, the beta test, and it's a gorgeous. First of all, it looks great. The Propellerheads, they just do a fantastic user interface, and it looks great. It's functional, and it sounds good. I mean, it sounds phenomenal. You know, it has a real big, beefy bottom end.
Is it floating point?
Thomas, is it floating point?
Yes. Internally, the digital music engine is anything you could dream of in terms of being totally state of the art, and they use multi-processing in a way I think so far not any other program is able to support, because they found a way to separate the weight equally on all the processor kernels, and in the future we will see more multi-processor systems, because the speed of the processors has sort of reached a certain limit, so you will see more and more kernels in the new processors, and they found a way to equally split the load on the processors, and it has 64-bit and everything that's possible these days.
Hmm. Yeah,
because they were able to start from scratch and look at, okay, what do we have now, and let's make the best out of this.
So let me just highlight a few things. Number one, if you're familiar with Reason, it's going to be really easy for you to get around Record. It's pretty much Reason with recording capabilities, but the mixer on Record is, like Thomas was saying, it's like an SSL. It has full dynamics, EQ, sends, inserts, it's all built in on the channel strip, so you don't have to add plugins to do any of that. So it's like having a virtual mixer, more so than just having a virtual channel strip that you have to add plugins to. It's all right there. And it sounds great. It looks gorgeous. And what I wanted to ask you, Thomas, is what kind of pricing are they going to have on it?
Retail in the U.S. will be
$299.
That's amazing.
For existing Reason users who have a copy of Reason 4.0, it will be $149. and there will be this Duo Pro product, which will be Record together with Reason. If it's a completely new purchase, it will be $499.
How many tracks are you able to get out of Record?
Depending on the power of your computer, it's infinite.
Wow.
But more than, I mean, are you 100 tracks? Is that easily gotten, or?
At the distributor conference in Stockholm a couple of weeks ago, they took this big demo song, which is I think you can access it when you download the demo version. It's from Josh Mobley, and it has, I don't know, 40, 50 tracks. Reason devices plus audio, and they just did Control A, select all, and copy everything. So they copied the entire project and doubled it, and played it back, and it just worked perfectly. And also a very cool thing is they have like overall time stretching. So whatever you do, whatever you have in there, if it's like MIDI with Reason devices or infinite audio tracks, you can just increase or decrease the tempo. And the sound quality is pretty amazing. I don't know if you have checked this out, Mike, already.
Yeah, no, I haven't done the time stretching, but definitely I've played the Josh Mobley demo piece, and it's phenomenal. Hold on, Bill has one quick question.
Does it do surround?
Does it do surround?
No. I think you can split. You can create 5.1 or so outputs, but you would have a problem with the panning and stuff. Because again, it's focused for musicians to do their recording, and it does rewire, and it has a single channel bouncing, so you can render each channel out through all the mixing devices or not, and go to your favorite surround mixing software with it.
So for surround, you just buy a second copy and put it behind you.
Is there multiple buses? Is it just a stereo bus?
It's a stereo bus, but there are and there's no grouping, but there's a lot of stuff you can do by using, well, the Reason mixing and cabling possibilities to create groups, and you have inserts on each mixer channel for something like a combinator, which is a device where you could put infinite Reason devices into. So you can create weird processing for each channel of the mixer.
And each track can have an individual out, right? Each track?
Yes.
Okay.
So you just feed that.
Wait,
I don't know. I don't know.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
No, it's like typical Reason. It's all, it has, you can break out of it if you go to the IO that Reason
has.
Yeah,
because in Reason you can split it up.
But when you're working with
you can, sorry, it's right.
Like 70 tracks.
Okay.
All I can say is, all these things you guys are talking about, just remember, record 2.0. You know, we got to give them something to work for.
5.0.
There you go, 5.0. Well,
when's it going to be released?
On Monday, July 20th.
Oh, that's close.
The open beta phase starts, which from now on, it's just a couple of days away.
Yeah.
So everybody who gets an invite code is able to check out the program. It's the finished version, basically, the one which goes to CD production. And this will work for a couple of weeks. And officially, the package will be at stores on September 9th.
Wow. Well, Thomas is going to get a lot of emails from at audionowcast.com.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah. Well, you're all welcome. I'm promised to get a big chunk of invites and invite codes on this by the end of this week. So I can spread it amongst your guests.
Cool.
All right. Well, thank you, Thomas, for filling us in on record and for talking to us a little bit about it. You're welcome to stay and join us for the rest of the podcast. I just want everybody to know that it's like, 4:30 in the morning over there tomorrow. So Thomas is an Iron Man right now.
No problem. It's a pleasure and an honor.
Thomas actually has a podcast over in Germany. He does a music podcast. What's the name of your podcast again?
It's basically the site is owned by a friend of mine. It's called musotalk.de or .tv. And we're doing a lot of, a weekly audio podcast similar to what you guys are doing, discussing stuff from the industry. And then there's a lot of video interviews with manufacturers and interviews with artists and producers, just all about music production.
So theirs is like ours, but better.
It's different. It's a totally different flavor.
Well, anyhow, thanks for waking up early and joining us. We're going to switch tracks right now. Today, our main focus is we're going to talk about vocals, and we've got Wendy Simon here, who is a teacher, and why don't you just give us a little bio on what
Wendy,
you say.
Who the heck are you?
Well, I'm actually in town visiting my boys and Rob. Mm-hmm. I'm a professional singer for 40 years, and I've sung everything from opera to rock to pop and jazz. I've been a jazz singer for many years, and also a music teacher and a private voice coach. A while ago, I taught a 16-year-old student, and her name was Alicia Moore, and now she's known as Pink. And I gave her voice lessons when she was a teenager.
Wow.
So I was very excited that she worked very hard and she became famous. It gave me some credibility. students, wow. And I'm also president and co-founder of a nonprofit in the Philadelphia area where I'm from that helps jazz and blues musicians and singers who are in crisis. So we're an arts and social services organization, and you can check out the website www.jazzbridge.com jazzbridge.org. And so my time is very, busy in the music world.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break right now, and then when we come back, we're going to dive into vocals. We'll talk about singing technique. We'll talk about recording vocals. We've got Martin here, who's one of the best male vocalists around.
Gracious and, me. that was worth coming out.
So we'll take a break, and we'll see you guys on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, I was giving compliments to Martin Page.
Thank you, Michael. I'm still remembering it. Very emotional moment.
We're going to talk about vocals, and we're going to talk a little bit, not just technique for miking and things like that, because that's all over the web, and we've talked about that before. But I want to talk about actual singing. Wendy, being a teacher, let's just start at the very beginning. Can anybody sing? Are there people that should just hang it up?
I actually taught a man how to expand a range from two notes, and with a voice quality that was really bad. His voice quality didn't change that much, but I was able to expand his range just from doing it. I think a lot of my students, when they have hearing problems, it's really, they're so nervous about it.
Right.
Because, so that blocks them from actually hearing and focusing on it. But there are people who really have a difficult time reproducing pitch. And one of the reasons I actually became a music teacher in a public school, because as a professional singer, adults were coming up to me and saying, "Oh, you're so lucky you can sing. I always wanted to sing, and my teacher in school always told me, just don't sing Happy Birthday." You know, and they were really hurt through the years because singing was such a creative form of self-expression.
Right.
So they felt really squelched, you know, and I decided when I become a music teacher, I'm going to let anybody who wants to sing, sing, just because I want them to, you know, if that's what they choose to do. But as far as professionally, I think people will weed themselves out.
I'm not even talking about professionally, because mm-hmm. I think if a lot of times when you listen to someone who is not singing good, what you're really listening to is someone who's not singing on pitch, who's
right.
someone who doesn't have a sense of melody or who's being mm-hmm. very monotone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why the first question I wanted to ask is, you know, given the parameters of learning how to hit a pitch, you know, is generally the human voice a good sounding thing? Is it something that's pleasant?
Well, it certainly can be.
I mean,
we hear beautiful voices all the time, and beautiful untrained voices, you know, natural
right.
voices. I think we carry so much emotional tension in our throats and in our jaws, you know, and I think the people who can really just open up and sing, they aren't tight in those areas, you know, and they literally sing from the gut or their feet. I just sometimes visualize people, when I teach students, I say, just take a breath and from the ground, from your toes up, just sing up and out the top of your head, you know, and just release any of the tension along the way, because our body, you don't sing from your throat. I mean, that's the vibratory mechanism,
right?
You know, but truthfully, you use your whole body. And I keep telling people that you have to really keep your own body with breathing and practicing and warming up your voice. You need to warm those muscles up, because it's all the muscles associated with breathing as well as making the actual the sound. You know?
Well, how do you recommend people getting through their break?
You have to keep it light. I tell people you have to keep it light, because
we should explain what the break is, actually.
Okay, it's a break in there's usually a change from sort of a chest resonation into more of a head type sound that at some point, just like in a clarinet that squeaks, mm-hmm. you know, there's a break going from a change of register, and sometimes you just have to keep it light. Some people are trying to force through it, and you just can't do it. You have to kind of keep a very light attack. There are two things that I was taught by my teacher in New York, Don Lawrence, who taught me how to belt and sing, you know, really wail out when I had been classically trained too, and always told never sing in that chest voice, you know. But he taught me, you know, just think about placement, where you're directing the sound. First thing is the breath, the support, and the next thing is placement, to direct the sound up and out. You just have to keep it light. The higher you go, if you're trying to sing high and you're coming from underneath it and you're very heavy and you're pushing, or even when you're trying to sing low and you're pushing on it, you're going to press down and it's going to make it too heavy. You won't make that break cleanly.
Have you found a way to expand the full voice to higher notes, or is it, or the break is the break?
Sometimes the break is where you just have to sing through it lightly, you know. And the more you practice, again, the more you vocalize, the more you sing, the more you use your instrument, you're going to expand your range.
Okay, really, really quick. I might be a little thick, but what is the break?
I'm just watching her, and I'm wanting to hear you do it. I want to hear you sing, actually.
Well, when people are yodeling, there's sort of it's not quite a click, but you can tell there's just a different quality of sound from here to
falsetto.
I got you.
It's a natural head voice, but for guys, they can call it a falsetto, but there are many guys who sing with that head voice, head resonation too. Sebastian Bach, but it's a matter of, I think you need to be trained to really go through it or just keep working on it yourself. You have to practice it. And I'm so envious of singers who can just come up, you know, you wake them up at 5 a.m. and they can sing nice and clear, and, you know, because for me, it's always been a thing. You have to use those muscles. It's like being a football player. You wouldn't go out and just play without warming up, you know, and limbering up. You're going to hurt something.
Right.
So Aaron Neville would be a high nasal singer.
Yeah, and he does a lot of break on purpose too. When he's singing, but he has a falsetto. But then he also has that a natural head voice that he uses too. Again, it's the lightness. I think it's the lightness and the placement where you're directing that sound. A lot of singers today direct it right into the nose. And of course, classical teachers told us in the mask, you know, but there are singers who sound like chipmunks. I don't want to name names, but there are some singers that drive me crazy. It's like nails on a blackboard because they sing it through here because they don't have the training. Because a lot of them don't take singing lessons to know how to support the voice. So they push it right in here. And it's like, you know, makes me want to scream. But, you know, if you have the proper breathing training, you can go
how
up.
How does that same line sound from done properly?
And so I told you, you know, instead of, it's backing up, you know.
That's pretty
easy. That's how I was trained. And it works for me because I used to sing 6 nights a week, 4 sets a night.
Wow. Well, let's, let me take advantage of the teacher portion.
Mm-hmm.
If someone is out there and they want to improve the quality of their voice and just their singing in general, what would be just square one? Where would you start them at?
First thing is breathing. You teach them how to bring the breath into the upper abdomen, you know, the diaphragm, and even lower, especially as if you're going to belt or sing higher. Whether it's a head voice or a head resonation or a belting chest resonation. And so you just, you know, expand down here. And then you, what I do with my kids, I have them hold that breath and then vocal, you know, just sing on it without letting go of it. It's like I tell the kids, it's like if my fist were my hand and my fist were pressing against a flat hand, as you're singing on the exhale, we sing and speak on an exhale, and you don't want to let go of it all because then it gets very breathy. You can do it for breathiness for affect, like a lot of singers do, you know, which is great for dynamics and stuff. But you really, when you're singing and holding a pitch, you don't want to let go of that breath, you know. And again, a lot of singers do use that breathing. You were talking about Michael Jackson before. He created this that little guttural thing.
Right.
And a lot of singers do it. So that's another thing he created.
Yeah.
It's fine, you know, for effect. Those things are good for effect. But to feel that voice connected to the breath so that you have pure sound coming out and not breath. And I work with 10 to 13-year-olds in my school, and they're very breathy at that time. So the first thing is connecting the breath to sound, and the second thing is where you're directing the sound. You don't want to place it in the nose. You know, you want to keep it backing up, not backing down, and back down into the throat. But use that support to spin that sound around the head and come up and out. That way, that's what I tell them. I don't know if you out there are listening can get us an idea. It's kind of like a wave coming up the back of your head.
You have to
and
describe the hand
forward.
Gesture you're making. This is radio.
It looks like you're making a mohawk.
Right, it comes up and out, but on top of everything. That's the other thing. You need to think on top of the pitch when you hit it. And certainly because microphones can pick up, you know, your little hair off that pitch. You know, so when you take that breath, you connect it into the belly and you come think right on top of it. Ah, and you just...
If we're a little bit off, we just give it to Rob and he fixes it.
Yeah, right.
Well,
there is
that. Well, so when you, when you're producing a vocalist mm-hmm. and they're flinching, put yourself in that situation for a minute, because everybody here is recording somebody that's that take after take they're going down.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best thing? I mean, there's a lot of hand holding that goes on in the mm-hmm. studio, but what would you say to a person who you know has the goods but is just starting to flinch?
You mean, by flinching, you mean holding back? Or
just missing it.
Just missing it?
Losing confidence. Because you can see it happen recording. Just
shut the lights off.
Just becomes a house of mirrors, and they just start losing it.
Right. Sometimes one of the great things is to do descending voice exercises, a descending scale. Ba-ba-da-ba, doobie-doobie-doo, that kind of thing. Just for them to stay on top and then come down onto the pitches, just to kind of relax them, or to even have them do something silly. I do this with boys with changing voices, doing the siren, woo, you know, or a woo, you know, that kind of thing,
right.
Just to get them do anything with their voice to
so
just
it's physical
expand.
It's
physical. It's certainly there's a mental thing going on. Let's face it, any time the recording light goes on, I don't care how professional everybody is, you know, we get a little, you know, little it's scary. And your voice, you feel so vulnerable. You know, that's why we keep so much emotion in our voices and a lot of tension in there, because we don't have buttons or keys or anything or strings to play, you know. Our body is our instrument, and when you're opening it all up, you can feel very vulnerable. So that's why some singers do need a little stroke.
Let me ask you. Okay, we've got the breathing, and we've got to where you focus your voice.
Mm-hmm.
What about pitch? Is there anything that someone can do so that they can hear whether or not they're on pitch, whether or not they're where they need to be? Because as a matter of fact, today I was recording this girl doing a track for a commercial that we're working on, and she was flat as a board.
Ooh.
I mean, and it wasn't.
Did she know it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, because I told her.
When I was doing a lot of vocal stuff early on, tape recorders are amazing because you go, I killed it. Then you play it back and you go, I'm so far off.
Yeah, right.
And if you can't hear it, that's a problem.
And here's the thing. And she had headphones on, and I thought
and
she
a
could
harmonizer on the music.
Well, no, I thought she couldn't hear herself, so I had her take one of the ears off so that she could hear herself a little bit better, and it actually got a little worse. So we did the take, and we're gonna deal with it electronically. But it was really appropriate because I knew you were gonna be here, and I wanted to ask you, what can people do once someone says, hey, you're a little flat, or hey, you're a little sharp. I mean, is there anything? I mean, is that one of those things where you either know it or you don't, or?
Well, it depends. I mean, if she's good enough to be, did you hire her?
She was cast for the commercial, and it's for an interactive video game, and she's also the on-screen talent too. So
okay, well, I mean, if she what you brought up, if she can't hear that she's under pitch, and you say she's mostly under. She's flat.
She was flat. She was
okay. What works is to tell is to have them come down on top of the notes. Is it an interval that she was singing from a low pitch to a high pitch and she couldn't make the high pitch because she was underneath it?
No,
or
you know what?
The whole thing.
It was like if you had like the pitch correction tool in Pro Tools and you went down like 2 cents. It wasn't a lot, but it was enough that. Like, most people wouldn't
and she
know
got
it,
the gig.
But
yeah, really.
There's so
I'm
much
thinking.
Amazing talent well, out there.
To, you
to,
on
like,
screen
to her credit, though. To her credit, yeah. It was it's for a I don't even know if I can say what it's for, but it's for a video game karaoke type of thing. So it was kind of it didn't have to be perfect, but it wasn't, but she was definitely a flat side. I was trying to help her by seeing mm-hmm. if she needed to hear herself. And I threw a little reverb in just to kind of, let it sing a little bit. So maybe she could hear a note afterwards. And it just didn't work.
We've worked with singers who've had that kind of issue. And generally, if someone's at all experienced, you can just tell them that overall you want the performance to have a slightly sharper, brighter edge to it. And we've dealt with some singers who could actually make that adjustment, but if somebody doesn't have an ear for pitch, there's nothing you're going to correct during the session.
There's a lot of things you can do wrong, though. Like if you're in a session and you tell a drummer, hey, something about your time, and then a lot of times their time gets worse. Same with pitch. Mm-hmm. It seems, in my experience, the second you mention pitch over the talkback, then it can just go downhill.
Right.
Because they get nervous.
There's got to be a way to back around it and build their confidence. Because that pitch word, it just takes most of them right down.
Well, one of the other things you can do that often helps a lot, too, if it's a kind of a complex arrangement, simplify it. Take out a lot of the instruments that don't matter. Get it to be more basic piano or guitar. And also, a lot of times, what I've done is I'll play a melody with a real pure sound, like a real basic organ tone or something, playing the melody, and then the singer will actually hear their voice beating against that instrument because they're playing the exact same note that they're supposed to be singing, and they'll actually hear the you know, when two things are close to the same pitch but not exact, you'll hear the beating between them. And so if you have the melody down on an instrument, a lot of times that'll help guide the singer. So simplify the arrangement they're listening to and put in an instrument playing the melody, and a lot of that kind of gives them a channel to settle into.
Because they're singing one melody but listening to another, they're trying to fight against.
They're hearing the harmonies of, you know, of the instruments behind them. Sure. They can't hear themselves.
One of the biggest problems I had when I was doing the music stuff was that you get this amazing performance, they were in the zone, it was great. Then they come back a week later, and we said, okay, it's really great, but we want you to come in this one section and redo the vocal. Now they got the problem that they're not matching.
Mm-hmm.
The performance is different. The gravel, the emotion, whatever magic that you captured on the first time,
You've
got to find a way to get back to that place.
You know what,
vocally, emotionally,
that happens with even the greatest singers on earth.
Absolutely.
I mean, from day to day, you're a little different.
You always got to have the best stuff up. There's never a scratch vocal.
How they were dealing with the mic, just, you know, so many factors. And
could be whether or not the person got enough sleep. I mean, your your whole body is your instrument on that.
They're more angry, more aggressive that day.
But if someone doesn't have an ear for pitch, can they learn to have one? I mean, if someone can't carry a tune, if someone seems tone deaf, like when it's happy birthday time, you can't actually tell what song they're trying to sing. Can someone go from that to being able to sing something simple like Mary Had a Little Lamb or anything?
Some people more than others. Some people more than others. Not everybody. I had a gentleman, 52 years old. He had a two-note range and a very scratchy kind of voice. And I said, look, I don't know what I can promise you, but just by doing it, by giving him voice exercises, I build up his range to an octave and a half. And he could hear, he could reproduce pitch because I gave him a tape to practice with of the voice exercises. I really can't stress enough a singer being prepared and taking seriously their instrument the way an instrumentalist takes care of their instrument. You know, singers get a bad rap, and many of them, because they don't put all those hours into learning music theory and reading music and developing. It's a skill and a craft, and just because it comes easily to a lot of people, I think they can learn a lot more. The people who have a lot of talent can learn a lot more, be freer by studying and really building up their voice, doing things that they never thought that they could do before.
But so with that one guy, anybody listening to him sing originally would have said he was tone deaf, right?
Absolutely. But just by doing, again, by teaching him breathing and working with him and starting where his speaking pitch was. Mm-hmm. You know, I would take him where his speaking pitch was and then develop a note or two after that and just have him sing on some syllables and then just have him go up and down. And gradually, after a year and a half, and many times I said, look, if you don't think if this is frustrating for you or whatever, just let me know. I didn't want to promise him anything. So it was a learning experience for me, too.
What do you suggest? I know over dinner we were talking about, vocalists that some of us find grating or that have a definite sound. Because there's some people that have such a unique sound.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we'll just point out here that Scott is referring to vocalists that I despise and that he likes. Let that be noted for the record.
I'll just throw one out there because probably won't be offensive. Okay? But, Geddy Lee. from Rush.
Awesome.
Or we would ask them about Journey. You know?
No, that's fine.
But, you know, it's something that if you find that you're a vocalist and you've got a signature sound, because also it is difficult because on one hand everyone loves it, mm-hmm. and everyone loves it to hate it because it's that one sound that keeps coming and coming. What do you recommend for people to expanding their character range? Not just their vocal note range,
right,
but put in a new character on it.
Well, putting, again, different breathing. I think just trying to go for a different quality of sound, you know, to maybe get rid of I would have to work with the person. I think it would be a matter of, again, breathing, directing the sound, and keeping, starting from a very simple, pure range or pure sound, you know, if they had a very heavy thing, you know, just to try and get them start from a speaking range, and then to sustain that. Maybe if somebody has a very heavy vibrato, you know, to just get them to sustain on the breath, all that kind of thing. So just to have them play with it. You have to work with it, you know, as a singer.
You know, this is a perfect segue into the second part of this whole vocal thing, because mm-hmm. we've got the technique down, right? Mm-hmm. We've heard about technique, but I think a huge part of vocals is emotion, and bringing in the emotion with the technique, because let's face it, some of these vocalists that don't have the best sounding voice definitely can throw emotion into it, and it takes it to another level. And actually, Martin, I wanted to talk to you about it, because you're a very emotional vocalist, and how do you put that emotion in your vocals? You know, I mean, for instance, like a song like The Door, which is very emotional, you know, vocal. I mean, what do you do? Do you consciously do that, or is it subconscious? You just kind of comes out?
I think you consciously do it over years of experience. You know, I was fortunate because I wrote songs, and then when you're writing songs, you tend to do the demos. So you're doing it as a guide, but as you're doing it as a guide, you're learning, because you're also engineering it and listening back and saying, oh, I'm out of tune or whatever, or I could do this better. But a lot what Wendy was saying is that, to me, one of the things which is good to mention is to visualize it. I tend to see something with my eyes. Even if I'm singing live or anything, everything shuts down and I see the notes. Or I see the emotion, I see the feeling. That came over a period of years. But when I'm about to sing, it's a matter, again, as Wendy said, it's such an emotional thing in general. It's like running. It's a body thing. So it's like moving your arms. You know, if somebody says to you, you know, makes you conscious of something, you think about it too much. So there's a period of like seeing the notes, seeing the song, seeing the emotion. And if I'm working on a song at home, you know, I start singing it, but it's probably about the ninth time or eighth time that you're in the zone and you feel it, and everything else sort of closes away from you, and you don't see it. The point we're making earlier about you've mentioned pitch, or you mentioned that stuff to singers, and they're out of the window. I've been very fortunate to work with lots of different vocalists, which were exceptional. And like Rob, you know, you just sit in the room and you go, like, good gracious me, I'm learning something different from this, from Robbie Robertson mm-hmm. through to Maurice White of Earth, Wind & Fire. You just go, well, and Tom Jones, you know, and Elton John I was with, and you just get that feeling, you just go, like, these guys have, they're seeing it. To me, it's a big visual thing. I noticed what Wendy was doing, she was moving her arms a lot that people can't see. It's very much a psychological thing, you know, and you visualize. To me, it's visualizing the notes, visualizing the melody. And I wouldn't even think about notes so much, but you do in the early days. But later on, you tend to see streams of things. It's streams. It's like musicians reading music on a paper. They're seeing not just one note, they're seeing a whole stream of information appearing to them. And that's the same thing to me with a vocalist, you know. It becomes unknowable in the sense that you're not studying it. It's just happening. And then you'll listen back and go, oh, I could do that a bit better. And you start to get into that thing we were talking about, like performance. And it starts the, oh. The point you brought up about getting character as well, again, it's to me, it's how you see it. If you want to sing it differently, you think differently. You see it with your eyes differently. I mean, how many times when you're in the zone and you're mixing, you don't really see anything when you're even mixing or engineers are. You don't see anything because you're in the zone of your brain. Your brain is there. And so, you know, you're not being distracted. It's like meditation.
Right.
It's a meditation thing, you know.
Well, and it's obviously so psychological what Wendy was saying and what Martin's saying. Like, when you're a singer, you can change the sound of your voice by imagining that this, you're singing through the top of your head or from the mask on the front of your face or from the chest. I mean, obviously, you only have one set of lungs and one set of vocal cords, and it's just your body manipulating these things in a different way. But it's so different. I've heard it described as, like, when Wendy was showing how you can sing with a breath or letting the breath run out, I've heard it described as kind of riding the wave of a breath, where you always stay on top of it in the strong part of it. Or, like, with singers who are having trouble with high notes, one of the techniques I learned a long time ago that helps is if you have a singer who's struggling and they're obviously starting to get worked up about it and they're having a hard time reaching high notes and you see them looking up, you know, that's a basic singer mistake, to look up for the high notes. The truth is, I've had a lot of great singers explain to me, the high notes are down below.
Right.
You look down, you bend your neck down, and you point down at the high notes, and then they're not so high, and you're coming at them from above instead of below.
Right.
But let's face it, it's the same set of vocal cords, it's the same lungs, you're the same person. So much of it is psychological, but it's amazing what a difference it is. Like, when you were demonstrating riding the breath or letting the breath go out, and some of those other things, it can sound like two different people, and it's just a slight change in the physiology of it.
Also experimenting. I mean, I do a lot of vocals. I had to when I was younger. I took a lot of vocal lessons and a lot of teachers, and I did a lot of vocals, and it, strange enough, it went into a lot of vocalizations for sound effects. And what I found was experimenting is, when you're doing certain things, how does it feel with the body? I find the same thing as a guitar player with my right hand when I'm picking, as you bite the string, it's hard to tell somebody what you're actually doing. It's a feel thing. It's, do you play it by the bridge? Do you play it by the front? How do you bite it? How do you snap it? Do you get an overtone? I find vocalizing the exact same way. It's a feel, maybe even golf, I don't know, where you know that if your body feels like this, this happens, making funny faces. I mean, it's something that I think you need to experiment. You need to try it, try different techniques, different things, see what your vocal cords can do, see what, even emotionally, how do you get the gruff, how do you put the grit in there, how do you get the slurping, wet stuff out of your mouth, what do you need to drink? I mean, you start learning your instrument as an instrument and what it can do and...
And just keep practicing it. But the thing is, when you're actually performing, whether it's recording through recording or performing live, the technique should be so ingrained in you that you don't have to think about it.
Absolutely.
That's the whole thing. So if you're really open, if you're vocalized and warmed up with your voice, and then after a half an hour or an hour, then you go to perform, you're right there. And if you just get, for me and many singers that I've spoken with, you know, if you talk about the song, the emotion, what is it that you're saying with the lyric? You know, a singer has to own the song, and you're so lucky that you write your own songs. You already own it. So, you know, you don't have, and so you just forget about the technique. It's there. If you're expressing emotion, you're open. You can just let it all wail. There's nothing grabbing and stopping the breath, stopping the sound. So, you know, you don't even have to think about that kind
right.
of
also, over a period of time, you start to hear yourself.
Right.
The early days, you don't hear yourself. You're just doing it. It's a mechanical thing. But over, you know, like I said, practice, all of a sudden, years later on, you're hearing yourself and you're judging yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge thing when you start to judge yourself. It means, like, oh, okay, I understand my voice a little bit.
Right. You know?
Well, and like with the singer you were talking about, Mike, today, who was having the pitch problems and stuff, there's nothing more important than a singer practicing and recording yourself and listening back. And
I thought you were going to say auto-tune.
Well, for today's emergency, that may be it. But you know what? It's very important for a singer to spend endless time practicing and try being a little flat and see what it sounds like. Try being a little sharp. Try purposely singing above the note. But you know what? Do it in the 10 to 15 years before we meet you. Seriously. Because by the time by the time there's a budget and we're trying to get some work done and you're sitting flat, that's not what we want you to discover, that you know how to make yourself a little sharp.
And it's an amazing thing that some people that can't sing, you know, engineers and producers will hear it. Clearly, they, you know, some engineers and producers I work with have, you know, perfect pitch.
Oh, it takes 2 seconds.
And they can't sing a note, but they can hear it, they know it, they see it. It's,
I know someone
it's
like that.
You know what's interesting is as an instrument, and I've seen instrumentalists do it, and you go everything back from Billie Holiday, mm-hmm. where some people can sing the notes, they sing the rhythms exactly on, and it's nothing.
That's right.
And then there's something that is, we talk about the emotion, but it's also the technique of singing. Is you might start flat and then go right into the note, bend into it like Alan Howarth on a guitar, mm-hmm. where you're bending into the notes. How to play with the rhythm? Do you want to be on it? Do you want to lay back of the rhythm a little bit, hang back and kind of give it almost a triplety, hanging back and then bring it back in? There's so many wonderful techniques I think that can happen with the voice, with pitch on purpose. So once you master how to do it right, then you kind of figure out, now, how can I play with it? Listening to other vocalists, things that inspire people. You know, because, again, you can play all the notes, but sometimes playing, and how do you play the notes, and how do you phrase it?
You know what? It isn't science. It's art. Stuff either has a vibe
Absolutely.
Or it doesn't. And I don't care if a singer's in tune if the vibe is amazing.
Yeah.
Seriously.
You know what? I was going to ask the question, what's more important, pitch or performance?
Vibe. Absolutely. Vibe performance.
Yeah. The vibe gives you that freedom, and you know what? You won't even have – I bet if people are that free from the vibe, from being the music, letting it's –
Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Not a great vocalist.
Well, you know what?
Great.
Stevie is always sharp. Frank Sinatra is always flat. Doesn't matter. You know,
right,
it's just
on the song, you know.
Mm-hmm. Listening to Scott talk, like, as a drummer – you have to shade it. Like, computer program drums, they're on. But a real drummer can push the hi-hat, shade the hi-hat forward into the beat, and yank the snare back. So it leads the groove, but it fattens up because the snare is a little late and the hi-hat's a little forward. And it's the same thing that you're talking about of swirling in and around things. If you're on a verse, you can kind of pull back, and then on a chorus, you can shade that hi-hat ahead, but your kick and snare are the same place.
Well,
and these are the things that make music.
Another thing for young singers as well is to sing things you like to sing. That, you know, things that you think you can handle, you know, that you like, that you can pull off. Because sometimes if people start guiding you to sing stuff that you're not really equipped to do, it can be painful and you never really get to the next spot. So it's nice to find things that you think you can do well and sing them.
Let me ask you a question, Martin. When you're talking about visualizing and seeing it, what are you actually looking at? What are you trying to see? What is it? What is the visual image that you're actually?
I think you see your voice. I think you see your tone, and you see your whole. You feel it, and you see it, and you hear the track, and then you see a point in that song where you hear your voice coming through it. You know, most vocalists I've worked with, they'll hear the track. Headphones have to be the right balance, as Rob will say. You know, singers don't hear themselves properly. It's a struggle. But then you see yourself in the landscape. You see yourself in the tapestry. And you see red or you see blue, and you see it and you aim at it, and then you think about your tone. You think about where you are, and you go, I know where it's going to sit. But that takes a bit of a while. It takes a while.
Yeah, you're not going to do that first time.
No. When I was first singing, you know, it's murder. You would say, put some reverb on my voice. Now I don't sing. I don't need any reverb. In fact, I have to look for the reverb. But in the early days, you couldn't stand it in the studio if the engineer puts your voice up without reverb.
Yeah,
you're crazy. Right. Now it's like, I have to look for the reverb because I don't really care.
Right.
It's there. But you sort of see a carpet in front of you of all tapestry and colors, and then you see this figurehead, and that's, you sort of lay yourself in that. So you see the notes, you see a skull, you see your head, you see the tone, you see the lyrics, you just see this thing in the front of it, in there, and you lay it on like you would a paintbrush, you lay it in.
You know, that's a great advice, because I'm sure there's people out there wanting to improve their their delivery, and you know, and we're getting great advice from Wendy mm-hmm. on the technique, and now that whole visualization. I mean, I've never heard that before, and I think that's really important.
We're going to have to post pictures of all of these conversations because everybody is gesturing with their hands.
But you know what?
It tells a lot of the story.
It really does because it's
very visual.
because your body's your instrument. What exercises, physical, not just vocal?
I mean, dance. Just move your body. You know, walk, jog, move your body, dance, you know, really. And yoga for stretching, you know, anything to keep your body. Because, again, you're not just treating your voice, it's your whole.
And before we used to play live, you know, I used to have 2 hours in a hotel room just warming up.
I remember that on tour.
We used to have to sing like 5 o'clock in the morning just, you know, for the radio shows. And so, you know, you'd get up at 3 o'clock in the morning just to, and my manager used to book a room where I could just go down and start. You know, wailing away, and then you get that warmth.
Well, hey, listen, we're running out of time, but man, that was fantastic advice. Thank you, Wendy. Thank you, Martin.
Thank you.
It was
my pleasure.
And you know, it's you need both parts. You need the performance, the pitch, but you also need the performance. And you know, if you're a vocalist out there and you really want to improve, you know, try doing some of these techniques, especially that visualization thing. That's amazing.
Practice.
Mm-hmm. Guys, thank you for being on the 70th podcast. And before we go, I want to talk a little bit about to Gloria from
Soundelux.
Really quick, why don't you explain a little bit about you're working with Scott now and you're producing music.
And then we're going to have you back later to really pick your brain. But you don't get off that easy tonight.
Well, actually... we're in a different division of, because you know, Soundelux, there's two parts of Soundelux. You have the Soundelux Films, and then you have Soundelux DMG.
Right.
So I'm Design Music Group. Basically, my title is actually, this is going to be really confusing, is a music producer, because basically my background is video games. And basically what I'm doing is I'm actually creating a music department of freelance contractors. So basically I... part sales rep as far as being an agent for freelance composers. We do commercials, video games, and location-based entertainment. And then once we actually get the gig, then I change hats and become what on the video game side is called a producer. But basically it's a fancy word for a liaison. So basically what I do is I work with the composer and the client, and I remove all left-brain activities from the composer, so that way the composer can focus and be creative. My focus is the scheduling, logistics, counseling services for the composer, or maybe even the client, you know, to figure out, also to maybe predict the future based on past experiences and working with clients and understanding game development, whether it's a movie. There's some movies, like I actually worked on... my background is actually from a development standpoint. I spent 6 years working at Blizzard Entertainment.
Wow.
And then 5 years at...
Which did one of those small little games called...
World of Warcraft.
Really?
Yes.
So did you work on the music?
Basically, they hired... the reason why Blizzard hired me was to work with their cinematic department. They have an actual team that's just for the pre-rendered cinematics. And basically, their team operates kind of like similar to a film. So they brought me in to bring in freelance sound designers and freelance composers and to help them, you know, get to the next level of what they were doing with their sound.
You realize as soon as this podcast posts, you're going to get like 10,000 resumes. You do know that, right?
And I'll chime in a little quick something. One of the things that as we're growing our company, we have a tendency to hire a lot of our clients, because one of the interesting things was we were always selling ourselves – to Gloria. And what's better than somebody recommending solutions to your problem than the person who used to be on the other side?
Right.
So she used to, I mean, she was the person that everyone went to say, hey, let me show you what I do.
Right.
So we were selling to her. Now she gets to be able to help solve our clients' problems as being a client.
Wow.
So she automatically understands she's got the pedigree and the background, so when she speaks, everyone's listening. So when she's saying, you know what, this is going to be your solution. I think you're going to like this.
Right.
All of a sudden, everybody's listening because they know that was used to be her job.
Right.
Right, yeah. So it's been really interesting, too, because I've been actually able to take the client side and bring it over to the contractor side, even down to a composer putting together the demo.
And all the composers we have are exclusive. So we do all the video game work. Well, it's important to know because it's not like, hey, I want to do some work. Everybody under
it's
us.
Everybody's exclusive for games, correct.
Wow.
Okay, you'll get 3,000 resumes.
So, in other words, you're the keys to the kingdom. I mean, they're not getting through unless they come to you.
Yeah, they have to come through me. And we're trying to build – we're trying to be different in the sense that we don't want a ton of composers on our rosters. We're looking at maybe 10 at the most.
Right.
We want them to be versatile. We want to be able to bring something to the table that's different. They have a different sound. They're not constantly competing against one another.
Kind of special guys. That's
you know, there's a lot of wild – type of music out there, and it's really about figuring out, you know, what's sellable. You know, is that person, you know, it's interesting because you listen to a lot of demos, you know, I do, and you actually after a while can pick up a style, you can pick up a sound, right. Even down to the mixing and the for me, you know, it was interesting when you were talking about the visualization. When I listen to people's music and their demos, I actually will listen to the whole demo. I'm most people only listen to maybe the first 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's rare.
You know, I'll actually put your demo in and I will listen to it and it becomes the backdrop for my day. Mm-hmm. I will actually put it in my spin and do my email. And if that music will make me stop what I'm doing because I have seen the picture, because now for me music becomes very visionary, all of a sudden now I'm hearing the story. Mm-hmm. Now that tells me that I have a composer that can tell a story.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And if it makes me stop what I'm doing to hear that story, then I know I've got something there. Mm-hmm. And now I want to know more. Now I want to see range, and I want to hear. Because even though, I mean, I have orchestral guys that have a specialty in doing orchestral, but it doesn't mean that they can't do something dark and edgy.
Right.
And a lot of times, even the guys that we work with have been doing this stuff for 10, 15 years. I'll tell them, I want you to throw me some music that I'll stop and say, whoa, you know, that's Jeremy. Oh, that's Jamie. You know, I didn't recognize that style. That's different. You know, because a lot of these guys are artists. They love doing the happy kid stuff, but at the same time, they want to do something dark and sinister.
Right.
And, you know, they need a change. They want to cleanse their palate.
And some people have different strengths. I mean, it's like every composer you talk to, they go, I pretty much can write anything. But doesn't
which
mean
is always the wrong answer.
But you know what? What's interesting is some people do certain things really well. And, you know, video games, I would say, has surpassed TV. It's definitely competing on movies as well as just albums because it doesn't have to be video games has pretty much freaked everybody out just from saying the word video games.
Right.
So you've offended everybody right there. So it's not like you got to be careful like TV. It might offend certain audiences. You've already offended them just saying the word video game. So at that point, the ability and range of creativity is almost endless.
Right.
Wow.
And because the audience.
Yeah, and then you're dealing with a medium where, you know, you have a client that's telling you, I have a 90-second cue that I need you to have a humming tune
right
in 90 seconds, you know, or you have to create music to where this person's going to be in this area for half a day. So you don't want to have a music that's repetitive and to the point where the player's now turning off the music and putting on something different.
Right.
You know, you want them, you know, because a lot of times, you know, in video games, music is just as much as experience.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it's going to get the player. It's just like what you were saying. It's going to speed them up. It's going to decrease them.
And there's a great, I think one of the great games, I think last year that came out on music was BioShock.
Yeah.
And what happens is a lot of times, what was interesting before, though the scores were kind of wimpy and bad synth stuff, then everybody became John Williams and Hans Zimmer and then orchestral stuff, the bar now, everybody can do it.
Right.
Everyone who's doing it, the orchestral stuff, I'd say, is not a big deal anymore.
Right.
Everyone's doing it. So then when the BioShock, what they did was, it was kind of, again, a shooting game, like many games that are out there, but they used Art Deco visually, and they did 1920s. Yeah. Dissonant, jazzy stuff. So it was really very different than you've ever seen in a video game. Blew away, won a ton of awards because it wasn't what you were expecting. It was a totally different experience. And what was great on the video game artistry side was it wasn't the same old stuff that just keeps getting churned out.
Right.
All of a sudden, there's incredibly artistic direction, thought that went into it, and it was nice to see something that was a little out of the box.
Do you know who did it? Who did the music?
Was that Charmin?
It was a guy from TV. It was interesting enough. I remember seeing these two guys, the director and the composer, and I'm forgetting his name. He did TV. He was doing a lot of very happy, very predictable stuff that he hated. But hey, you know, it's got to make a living. And he was talking to, was it Jen? Or the girl who's the audio director? I'm forgetting her name. And Ridgway. And they were just talking about music they liked, you know, obscure, abstract music that they were just fond of. And he goes, oh, I love this music, but I can never get a chance to play it. And they said, for this game, that would be great. So they were able to take something that would even be considered unique in film and go in that Emily Ridgway. Take that in a very unique way. All of a sudden, it just went off the charts. It was a big seller. And the audio and music were big standouts.
Wow.
All within that game.
You know, we're going to – this is another podcast. We're going to have to invite you back, Gloria, because this is fantastic. But it really shows how music's changing and how, you know, it's the next evolution. I mean,
Michael Giacchino came from video games and now he's on fire in every movie scene you can think of.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Well, thank you for stopping by and thank you for being here. We're gonna have to wrap it up. It's been a great podcast. Before we go, I need to give a shout out to Lee Pierce from Australia.
Oh, yes.
Lee listened to every single one of our shows.
Wow.
And sent an impressive email.
That's why he's in Australia.
And Lee, we are going to answer your questions, but not right now.
No, we definitely will. We definitely will.
But I wanted to give a shout out because anybody who can listen to all the podcasts definitely deserves a shout out, a medal, or something.
Medication.
Also want to point out, we've got some friends here from the podcast. My brother is here, and want to thank him for his help. Yeah.
Ben.
And you brought a friend of ours, Brett. Brett, thank you for joining us. And then we've got another good friend of mine, Johnny O'Neill. He's actually with the group Logix, right? Yep, and his is going to be an up-and-coming band, so you guys got to watch out for that. You can check him out. He's a friend of ours on MySpace, and so you should check him out. And Hez, it's good to have you back, buddy.
The Hezinator returns.
And Hez is he's in the promised land right now.
He's
working for Blizzard.
For the cinematics department.
Department. And we are all proud of Hez. Go out and make good out there in the big world.
Make us proud.
How is it? How is it working in that environment?
It's awesome. Awesome. You know, it's interesting. You know, video games, I wasn't even really sure how big it really was until I got there. You know, I knew rationally how big it was, but I've worked on some pretty cool movies and I've worked for some pretty cool studios and stuff. But when I got down there and just saw the attitude and the sort of amazingly cool attitude about being as epic as possible, I was really blown away and I've been swept up by it. So, you know, I'm playing World of Warcraft every night and much to my wife's chagrin. And
have you seen the South Park episode?
That's a classic. Yeah. Total
they
classic.
They showed that to me my first Hez, day.
Hez. What are you, Hez?
Come on. Right now, I'm Alliance. I'm a druid. I'm thinking about switching over to Horde.
See,
so.
Horde is where it's at.
Exactly.
Okay,
that's where Horde, the cool characters are. Anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah, they have really good. Cool quest too.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a Tauren hunter.
Wendy, okay? I think we're in Nerdland.
We're geeking out about video games.
So, Rob, are you up to anything that you can not tell us about?
I'm up to a whole bunch of stuff I can't tell you about. I will actually give you a sneak preview, though.
All right,
just a little hint. Wendy is actually a mom too. No, that's not what I've been up to. Wendy and her husband George are good friends of mine. I've known them for a long time. But I also know they have twin sons who I've been hearing bang on musical instruments since they were, I don't know, 8 or 9 years old. And they're older now. They're, what are they?
Almost 24.
Almost 24. So they're 23-year-old twins. And they've got a band that I'm going to be working with, and they're excellent. And we'll be talking about them more as we make progress. But that's one of the things Wendy is doing out here, is actually helping them with some vocal stuff and just being mom in general. And we're going to be starting to record with them soon, so we'll talk about that here.
Great.
Yes.
And Wendy, you teach you do private vocal lessons, right?
Yes, private vocal lessons, and also I teach in a middle school. Do music, drama, all the good stuff.
Is there a website or something if somebody was interested and wanted to, get vocal lessons from you? Which I so would do if I could
thank
sing.
Thank you. I don't have my own website.
Okay.
I really don't.
Just, you know what, if you do want to get in contact, you can always send us an email,
audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Rob and will make your MySpace page.
We'll get it to it.
And check out our Jazz Bridge page. Yeah. That's the nonprofit she was talking about.
And Bill, what are you up to?
I've just been in the studio for hour after hour after hour, and I'm just posted my 63rd video on Live 8. I've got about another 20 to go. I have to be all in on Friday.
Wow.
And then I start, after that I start Live with Live 8, which is going to be all DJ stuff, controlling live with ABC, Akai, controlling it with iPhone, with Wii, and just exploring the whole area of performance, which, of course, ever since I got into computers, I've been somewhere visualizing, like visualizing the day when I can actually play this thing like a Tony Williams ride cymbal.
Wow.
Play computers, and so I'm excited about that. And then after that is another title that I can't really speak about.
Right. And
Apple.
He won't, because I tried to get him to speak about it, and he will not.
Actually, the coolest thing is that I was invited to become a Waves beta tester, so I have a Mercury bundle on my iLock, and I've been really doing a lot of Quadrant 4 messing around with that and not getting my work done.
Okay, cool.
Wow, that's great. How many videos have you done? Like a couple hundred?
Yeah, I did 60 on Pro, doing video or working with picture in Pro Tools and Keymap and Mainstage before that. It's
hundreds.
I like to get out of the studio. That's why I came tonight. Hey, I've got something to do.
Going out. It's like day 506.
And then I started Twittering too, because after that I just get crazy. You get crazy sitting in the. I got a Herman Miller chair, but I'm going nuts sitting and talking. That makes me crazy. So that's why
I have to do
out.
A video series on rehab.
That's right.
Sheesh.
Leaving the studio.
Wow.
I got to start again when I get home.
That's a problem when you build a studio without a door. It's there all the time.
And Gloria, are you guys accepting? If somebody wanted to get into it, will you listen to stuff, or should I just edit this part out?
I will listen.
Okay.
The big thing is, for what we're trying to do, is we're not trying to look for up and coming.
Okay.
I'm looking for people that actually have credits, that have actually sometimes, and it does help to have some video game credits behind you.
Or TV or film.
But even the TV or film, like I've had some really great guys send me some TV stuff and some film stuff, but they don't necessarily, to me, translate into games.
Yeah. Right.
There's a certain sound that you just know, you just instinctively know.
Yeah.
The romantic love story, not so much.
Not so much, yeah. It would have to be the right game. I mean, there's some developers out there that are doing some really crazy stuff.
Right.
But, yeah, it's really about, you just know, when you play enough games, you've seen enough games, you've heard enough demos, you just know.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You just hear it, you see it, you feel it.
All right. And, Hez, we know you're on the Alliance as a druid.
Currently, yes. Not for long.
But, and how's your music going? You got a symphony system, right?
I just got a new symphony system, and I'm really enjoying that, and getting ready to upgrade to record after this podcast. Yeah. It's pretty cool. So it's going pretty well. The last 3 months has really been all about, being director of photography.
Right.
So I've been working every day, no days off. So it's a new gig and setting up a whole new department and trying to get everybody kind of in on the film DP type bandwagon and really trying to control things from that standpoint. So getting ready to get back into it, and I'll be coming back more often to the podcast.
Great. So we're so proud of you. You're like the prodigal son that made good out there.
Our little Hez is growing up.
He's growing up. He's exactly. out there.
Yeah, that's a problem.
He never calls.
I have one real quick story about that. You know, Second Street in Long Beach, it's kind of this cool little hangout. And after the news about Michael Jackson, all the guys with their big hogs on the weekend go down on Long Beach and they all hang out at this one place. And all these Harleys are lined up. And they're pretty big, tattooed guys, pretty tough, you know. And they're out there, and as a tribute, they were parked, and they had all the radios playing. And so you hear Billie Jean really loud.
And they're all moonwalking, you know?
And they're all kind of sitting there, sipping their coffees, sitting down and looking at each other like, yeah, dude, you know? And I'm like, if that guy walked up to me in a dark alley, I'd be like, oh, my gosh. I was like, wow, what great sensibility, you know? And, yeah. And my wife was with me, and she was like, this is really trippy, but Long Beach is really cool, but... You know, it's kind of a haul, but I'm coming back. So.
Wow. That's great. Yeah.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Come back. We miss you. Scott.
Hello.
All your movies came out.
No, I got one coming out in Labor Day.
Which
one? I got
one?
A new one called Gamer.
Oh, okay.
It's with Gerard Butler, the posters, I think, are trailers on the Apple website, and I've been noticing we just previewed an attempt a new movie and gamers all over the place. So I think that's it's a movie about games, so it's kind of perfect world for me. Got movies and games tied together. Working right now on Season of the Witch.
Great.
And we're pretty much in the middle of it. And I'm actually on a week and a half hiatus and loving every moment of it and just getting out and teaching my son how to swim.
Oh, good.
That's really what it's about. You know?
And Pagey Boy, it's so,
calm yourself down.
It's great to see you,
take it
everybody.
Easy, take it easy.
I haven't seen you in a long time.
No, it's
I haven't even talked to you in a long time.
No, it's been a long time.
You never call.
I do. You never return me. That's the way it goes. No, I've just had my head down, working very hard on finishing the songs for another record. And when I thought I'd finished, I started to write a bunch of new songs and thought they were better than the ones that I had. So you know how that goes.
Right.
So writing, really enjoying some of the stuff I'm doing now. I've sort of experimenting on some very strange rhythms and tempos and time signatures and sort of having a lot of fun. And at the same time, Josh Groban just cut Me Moreno again on a live album. And I think it was on the East Coast. He's bringing out a DVD. And just writing like crazy. Just writing like crazy and thinking that I've got it and then jamming and finding out like, this is even better. Let's go back and work at it.
How's the studio holding up?
Terrific.
Good?
Terrific. Yeah, I mean, I've got everything I want there. You know, it's like you set me up really good, Mike. So I'm sure there's stuff that I could advance on, but at the moment I'm just about learning this.
Oh, you need version 9.0 of all the stuff you already have.
There's some good stuff. Got to show you. Got to show you.
I'll look forward to it.
Omnisphere. You'll love it.
I look forward to it.
10 billion new sounds.
Get your checkbook out, Pagey. So with Mike, it was always like, you need to spend some more money.
Well, it's because I just wanted lunch.
There is one thing I forgot to mention. There are so many things I can't talk about, but there is one more that I do want to talk about, and that's I've been working with an artist named Fox Fagan that we just actually finished. I guess you'd call it an EP. It's four songs. And
great
it's,
name. It, Fox Fagan.
That's actually
his name. Say that three times fast.
That's great.
It's Fox Fagan from Australia. He is from Australia. Actually, I think he's born in England, but grew up in Australia. Really talented singer-songwriter. And we just did this EP with him, and it's the first thing that we've ever done at my studio that went straight to vinyl.
Wow. Ooh.
So it is actually available as a vinyl EP, and it's really cool. He's actually bringing me my copy tomorrow. But it turned out really good, and we're going to have it online, too. And by the time this posts, if you go to foxfagan.com, you'll see some semblance of a website. We've got the basics of it up now.
Great.
But really talented
So
guy
you play
it
backwards, you hear Megan Fox?
No. And I should say the spelling is Fox Fagan. Foxstate.com.
And we've got to ask you, Mike. What are you doing?
Yeah, Mike.
Come on.
Well, actually, I've been busy. I finished doing all the sound design for Raj Kapoor, who was a guest on the podcast, and he directed the Dancing with Stars tours, and we worked together on American Idol tour. So all the artists have an intro video, and so I did sound design. I worked with the music director on all that, and that was kind of fun. That was actually – it was a really good gig. It was really fun. It was really bad timing because I had to turn down a gig to work with Rob.
Yeah, I was finally going to hire him to do something.
But it was fun. So if you see the American Idol tour, you'll know that someone did some of those sound effects out there. I got a new MacBook Pro.
Yeah, you did, didn't
and,
you?
Another one?
I did a commercial. I did a whole commercial. For me, this is a record in a library because
it's really quiet, right?
Well, yeah, because here's the thing.
So he got there.
I got a client calls me up. They need sound effects. They need a mix. They need it done over 4th of July weekend. And I wasn't going to come back up here, especially with all the traffic and everything. And so they emailed me the 15-second version and the 30-second version. And I took this and my little sound effects drive and headphones, and I went to the library and I cut all the sound effects in. I did the whole mix, and then I came back home. And here's a good tip for people out there. If you're going to do mixing, when you mix in the headphones, it's going to give you a different space, a different mix than if you mix with speakers. So if you have to mix in headphones, go someplace quiet later on, take your headphones off, and crank up the volume and listen to your mix just through the open speakers, because it's like listening to it through Auratones.
How's that little 10K tone going?
Because it worked, and ended up posting the stems, and it's going to be on air, and as soon as it airs, I'll tell everybody what it was, but I don't want to do it beforehand because I don't want the client thinking, I paid this guy to work at the library.
So
next time you're
off the ocean, you know?
So, wait until you
catch
the
chat. Right. Yeah,
because in their mind, it's like, yeah, he's in the studio slaving away, you know, and I'm sitting there between mystery and self-help, you know? So the computer, just all the plugins that I needed, it just didn't choke. It's big enough hard drive that I installed all my samples and everything on the computer. So it was a luxury. It's like, it's going that direction. People are going to be recording and doing things in places you never thought. If not for anything else, just for the inspiration. And I will tell you, I was kind of inspired being in a different environment, and you're like, how cool is this? I didn't want to tell the guy who was sitting next to me working on his taxes or whatever he was working on, but I was excited. I'm like, yeah, I'm in the library. So
that's cool.
Anyway, it was kind of fun.
And let's also not forget to thank Thomas for being on the show. It seems Thomas, like about 17 hours yes. ago, but
yeah, that was a long time
ago.
He's
sleeping now. He's sleeping.
Hopefully.
Thank you, Thomas. Doesn't he have a great voice, though?
Yeah, he does. Well, he put us all to shame when he was here that time, too.
I know he does.
Something about Skype, though. It's just amazing on him.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening to this gigantic podcast of epic proportion. And if you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And you can also catch us on our MySpace at myspace.com/audionowcast. And there's also a Facebook URL. I think it's now facebook.com/audionowcast, but I'm not sure. But
that's much too easy.
Yeah, you can link to it from our website. Thank you all for being here. It was great. Do you realize that the four original people from the first podcast right here are here? Scott, Bob, Martin, and myself.
That's true.
You know? So
70 the little years old.
Thank you, guys. I want to thank everybody who's here, and everybody, you know, all the new guys that have come, Bill and Hez and everybody, because this show would not have happened without you. And Andrew, thank you, you know, when you're here. And Bobby, you know, thank you when you're here. And from
so
all of us,
seeing those guys,
I still think we need the Bobby blow up doll.
I'm not doing it. No way.
And on that note, thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to another 70, and we'll catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by AFEX and Westwave Audio.
The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbitier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses AFEX's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.